Second Timothy is the last letter that we have that the Apostle Paul wrote before his execution. He wrote it from a prison in Rome, and he wrote to Timothy, who was in Ephesus at the time. Paul knew that his life was soon to be over. His trial was before Nero, who was the Roman emperor at that time. And you know, while Rome had a number of tyrants as rulers, it could very well be that Nero was the worst. He was a man who was stained with every crime. The murderer of his own mother, of his wives, and of his best friends. He was deluded into thinking that he was a musical genius. And he thought that if he could just get the proper inspiration, that he might could come up with a composition that would become immortal. And he thought maybe a great fire. And so most historians believe that he had Rome set on fire while he sat on an elevated porch overlooking the city, attempting to play an instrument similar to the violin. Well, the people of Rome were angry that their city was torched. And you know, Nero, in an effort to cover himself, shifted the blame to the Christians. And they became the perfect scapegoats. Christians at this time were generally suspected and despised by Romans. And one of the main reasons was due to misconception. For one thing, believe it or not, they believed Christians to be atheists. They noticed that they wouldn't bow down to nor confess Caesar as Lord. They would not worship the pagan gods that the Romans worshiped. They would not have statues of them in their homes. And, you know, in that sense, they were considered to be atheists. And there was nothing too bad to be believed about people such as that. They were observed to be very fond of one another. They were observed to sneak around at night in secret meetings. And many Romans concluded that probably what they were doing were engaging in wide-scale sexual orgies. They were overheard talking about eating flesh and drinking blood. Obvious references to the communion. But there were Romans who concluded that they were guilty of cannibalism. Probably what they were doing is that they were eating the offspring that resulted from the sexual orgies they engaged in on a weekly basis. And so, again, there was nothing too bad to be believed about a people like this. And so there was a wide-scale persecution that broke out against Christians. There was no protection under the law. Some of them were thrown to the wild animals in the amphitheater. Others were burned alive at the stake. Historians tell us that sometimes Nero illuminated his garden grounds with the burning bodies of Christians. Well, everybody knew that Paul was their leader. And so you can see that Paul's life would be in constant jeopardy. And you can see that because of the tone of the attitudes of most Romans, it would not be politically expedient for Nero to acquit him. And so Paul knew that when he came up before Nero for sentencing in this trial, that he was going to be condemned. He was going to be condemned, and he was going to be executed. And so he wrote a letter to Timothy in Ephesus, and he told Timothy, he said, you come to me as quickly as you can, get here before winter if at all possible. And toward the end of the letter, he began to reflect. And he takes a look from three different perspectives at his life. First of all, he looked at himself in the present. He looked around himself and assessed what his condition was at the time. Then he looked backward and he made an assessment of the past. And then he looked forward and he made an assessment of the future. And those are three perspectives that we would all do well to make, not only as we end a year and enter into a new year, but it would be good for us to make those looks on a regular basis. Notice what he said as he took these three different looks. He said, in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 6, he says, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Notice now as he looks around himself and just makes an assessment of the present, he said, my departure is at hand. That word departure is an interesting word. It has several layers of possible meanings. Sometimes the word departure is used to refer to the unyoking of an animal from the cart or the plow. So in that sense, Paul's death to him would be rest from toil. It would be an opportunity to lay the heavy burden down. The word departure is also sometimes used to refer to the loosening of bonds and fetters. And so in that sense, death for Paul would be a liberation. It would be a release. He would be exchanging the confines of a Roman prison for the glorious liberty of the courts of heaven. Sometimes the word departure is also used for loosening the ropes of a tent. Paul had traveled the roads of Asia Minor for years, and he knew what it was like to strike camp and continue his journey. He was a tent maker by trade. And in this sense, departure was striking camp and setting out on his last and his greatest journey on the road that would lead him to God. And then the word is also sometimes used for the loosening of the mooring ropes of a ship. Paul had many times set sail, leaving the harbor and launching out into the deep of the Mediterranean Sea. But now he's launching out into the greatest deep of all. He's setting sail to cross the waters of death to arrive at the haven of eternity. So as far as Paul was concerned at the present, his departure or his death was the laying down of burdens in order to rest. It was the laying aside of shackles in order to be free. It was the striking of camp in order to take residence in heavenly places. It was the casting off of the ropes that bind us to this world to set sail on the voyage that would end in the presence of God. Who could fear such a departure? And who could begrudge anyone such a departure? Now he reflects upon the past. He says, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. You know, Paul often borrowed from the common things of life to illustrate spiritual truth. He borrowed from agriculture when he said, we reap what we sow. He borrowed from architecture when he said, you are the temple of God. He borrowed from the military when he said, put on the whole armor of God. And here, Paul is borrowing from the realm of athletics. The word fight, as is used here, is the word that refers to a contest in the arena. And in the realm of athletics, if an athlete has done his very best, and after the contest is over, he can reflect back upon it, and he can see that, you know, he didn't leave anything to be expended. He had expended all of his energy, and he can't see any place where he might have done anything any differently. There's a great amount of satisfaction that fills his heart. And that's what Paul was saying. He reflected back over his life, and he said, in essence, that he couldn't see the smallest thing that had been left undone. He had given it his best effort, and what a great feeling of satisfaction that must have been in his heart at that time. He says, I have finished my course, or I have finished my race. And that's precisely the difficulty of life. It's easy to begin the race of Christianity, but it's not easy to finish. And the one thing that is necessary for life is staying power or endurance. And that's why we're told in Hebrews 12 and verse 1 that we're to run the race of Christianity with patience. That word patience means endurance. That tells me that the life of the race of Christianity is not a sprint, but it is a marathon. And that's the reason there are so many who fall out, so many who fail to endure and finish the goal. A story is told about a well-known man, internationally famous, that was toward the end of his life, and his biographer had already been selected and was going to write his life story. And you know, some of his close friends tried to persuade him to allow the book to go ahead and be published before he died so he could enjoy, you know, the fruits of it himself. And he would not. He said, absolutely not. He said, I've seen too many fall out on the last lap. And so it is. There have been untold multitudes who have fallen out on the last lap. Ruined a noble life, or, you know, spoiled a fine record because of some folly in the closing laps of the race. Well, how gratifying it was for Paul to be able to reflect back and say, I didn't drop out. I endured it all, and I have completed the race. He says, I have kept the faith. And that expression, the faith, sometimes refers to that body of teaching that has been given us by divine revelation. It is the infallible standard for our faith and conduct as we sojourn here upon this earth. Jude said in verse 3 that we should earnestly contend for the faith And in that sense, Paul was saying, in this contest, in this struggle of life, I have struggled according to the rules. I have kept the rules. I have lived up to the contract. I have kept the faith. And he often makes reference to keeping the faith and maintaining the sound doctrine to Timothy in the pastoral epistles and to Titus as well. Then he says, in addition to that, the faith can also refer to his personal faith. And in that sense, it would mean that through thick and thin, in freedom and in imprisonment, in all of his perils by land and sea, and now in the very face of death, he had never lost his perfect confidence and trust in the Lord. Within his heart, there was a hope which never flickered and which burned throughout all of life, and now even finally in the face of death. Then he anticipates the future when he says, henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all of them also that love his appearing. Again, making reference to the games and the laurel wreath that is adorned the winner of his event. Paul anticipates that he's going to inherit a crown that's not going to wither and decay in just a few days. And right here you can see that his focus really turns from the verdicts of men to the verdicts of the Lord. Now he knows that in a very short period of time that he's going to stand before Nero, and he knows what the verdict is going to be. But he also knows that he's going to stand before the Lord. And he's confident at what that verdict is going to be. And the truth is, you can be indifferent to the verdicts of men if you're confident that the verdict of the Lord is going to be well done. As you reflect tonight, your immediate surroundings, as you reflect back over the past and you anticipate the future, if you too would lack that verdict of well done, you too must do as Paul did, and that is fight the good fight, finish the race, and keep the faith.